Welcome back to the Dry Podcast. This week we have a special guest. It is a special guest of all special guests, and it's her first ever podcast. She is called Annika Davey, and she's also the wife of the ledge that is Steve Davey. And they are the dream couple that we've been blessed to have in our lives since we went on our first little jaunt up to Scotland. And yeah, they've been a massive part of what we've done on Dry ever since. And it's lovely to have Annika on. We're going to have a nice little chat to her. She's also going to be doing some stuff at Dryfest, which is mega cool. Obviously, mentioned Dryfest last week, happening in June in Somerset. Tickets are out now, but we'll go through that later on. But Crystal's having another week off. She's getting a bit out of touch. I tell you, she's going to have to do a few on her own when she comes back. Andy Ramage is back in the country, but a bit jet lagged. So here we are, myself and Annika. Annika Davey, how are you?
I'm really good. Glad to be doing my first podcast with you on The Dry.
We're glad to have you. Are you nervous?
Not too bad. I think I was more nervous before I joined the call. But yeah, I feel all right now.
Good.
More nervous. Thanks, trying to get out of work early to get on the podcast.
Let's hope they're not listening.
No, I told them. I didn't tell them what I was doing, but I told them I had to leave early.
Well, Annika, you are a Dry legend. Do you want to just start off by telling us a bit about your journey so far?
Yeah, okay. So I just reached my 1,000 days sober a couple of days. And I've been like the classic binge drinker. So I think you can relate, Matt. I never really had that off switch. So it was never one bottle of Prosecco, it was 5 or 6. And I went, as a lot of people do, tried to stop, started again, tried to stop, started again. And then eventually one day after quite a massive boozy day at the races where I ended up losing the diamond out of my engagement ring, I thought, woke up the next day and thought maybe it's time to knock this on the head. And yeah, just was doing all right. But before Dry came along, I was felt quite lonely with it all because I didn't bother looking to see if there were any other sober people. I just told myself I was the only sober person in Scotland, shut myself away, just tried to keep doing the same thing. So I'd go out with Steve, he was still drinking, I'd sit in the pub, I'd be pretty miserable, end up moaning at him because I'm like, I want to go home, and obviously he wants to stay out. And yeah, so then I don't know how, but you appeared on my Instagram feed just randomly.
Lucky you.
Yeah, I know. And then I started following you, and then obviously learned about Dry, and I was like, oh, as soon as this comes out, I'm straight in. And I was day one, went in, put a post up, and I couldn't believe there were all these other people around doing the same as me, because like I said, I really just thought I'm the only person doing this, because everyone around me still drank, like all my family and everything. So yeah, Dry was just like, thank God.
Yeah, and that's nice for you to say that, because that is exactly why we created Dry, because that reason. When I stopped drinking, I was like, hang on a minute, I'm the only person here. I remember I said this before, but I went for a run once. I came back and said to my missus, I was like, I'm going to start an Instagram account. I'm going to talk about giving up alcohol, and no one else in the world has done that, so I'll be the first one ever to do it. And admittedly, when I did do it, obviously I found there was a lot of people, a few people doing it, but yeah, nowhere near as many people as there is now. But yeah, that's why I thought to myself, right, I need to create something where we can all be put in the same room, virtually, physically, whatever, and just be able to share our experiences and just touch base with each other and just know that there's other people doing the same thing as you, because it does take an awful lot of courage to do it. Yeah. But it makes it a lot easier when you've got people to talk to, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And just seeing that people have gone through the same like stuff you've gone through, they've struggled, they've gone back to the drink, they've gone like then gone to be sober again. And the other massive thing with Dry was you came up to Scotland, obviously, with Andy and did that Edinburgh walk to start with. And I met so many amazing people on that who've now like become really good friends. And then wasn't planning on doing the Glasgow walk the next day, but by the end of the Edinburgh walk, we'd already decided we were coming through to Glasgow. And obviously we got to meet you and Andy for a bit and have a coffee and stuff. So
yeah, it was so nice, wasn't it? And we went around all the major cities of the UK, and without a doubt, that was the biggest attendance, which we didn't know Like we still know, don't know to this day when we do an event, we don't know who's going to turn up. A lot of the stuff we do is just free turn up and meet. Sometimes there's two people there, sometimes there's 20 people there, sometimes there's 50 people there, whatever. But it doesn't really matter to us because we think you've got to start somewhere. And when we went to Edinburgh, you're right, it was like, wow, this is pretty tight up here. Like everyone, there's a lot of good people. And then, like you say, to our surprise as well, the next day, and many of the faces from Edinburgh were turned up in Glasgow as well, including you. It's like, and it's funny, isn't it? Because Scottish people get the bad rep. I mean, I think any country you talk to, like English people say they're like get bad rep for being like lads and ladettes. Scottish people get the bad name for the heavy drinking. Irish people think they do as well. Welsh people do think they do as well. But actually, what you find is we're all probably as bad as each other. And where there's extremes, there's always extremes. So if there's extreme booze culture, there's usually an extreme anti-booze culture. So yeah, it surprises me, but also it doesn't surprise me. But was Steve drinking then with you there at that point? How new is he gave up a couple of years? Was it a couple of years ago? 18
He's
months?
done a year, so he'd given up in the December before the dry walk, because I had said to him, I'm going to go, when he was still drinking, I'd said to him, I'm going to go on this walk in January with all these people from the dry app. And he had been a bit like, what's that app you're on? Like, what are you on your phone for all the time? Who are you talking to? And I'm like, oh, it's just all the sober people. And he'd been a bit like, what? But then when he stopped, and then I think you were talking about off the sesh, and I'd said to him, I think that would be really good for you to join. Because like me, he didn't have anybody really that didn't drink. There was just me, and I think he probably needed some sort of male company as well, not just me going on at him. So yeah, when he joined though those walks, he'd only been stopped about a month or so, but he just loved it and made so many good connections as well.
And I remember when I remember him giving up, but I can remember saying to him on the screen, like, I could see a difference, physical difference in him. Like every time I saw him on the screen on Off the Sesh or wherever, I was like, mate, you're like waste. I feel like, did he lose a lot of weight? I
He
don't.
lost, I think he's lost about 2.5 stone actually.
Yeah, because you can really see it on someone. I say every week, I was like, blimey, he's like literally getting thinner and thinner. And it's incredible to see that. Not just that, it is the way he was speaking was more confident. We should stop speaking about Steve-O, shouldn't we? Because Steve-O is such a legend. We'll come back to him.
He
We'll
is. We'll
park
come
him.
back.
We'll park him. So your journey when you were at the races all those years ago, how many years ago was it? And how long had you been building up to this decision, I suppose? Did you know it was coming?
So that day at the racing will have been 3 years ago in June. But I had been trying, like, because I'd started to get really ill from drinking. So even after, like, well, say a couple of drinks, it was never really a couple, but I was always sick, like, regardless. And then my anxiety was just like through the roof. I couldn't look at my phone the next day. My phone was like shut away in a drawer because I thought I'd just like upset everybody. Couldn't get out of my bed, couldn't even hold water down. We'd just probably lie in bed watching endless repeats of Friends and crying at them. But I think since I think 2019 is when I first started to think, hang on a minute, something's not adding up here. Like, why am I going out and doing this and then having to put up with all the rubbish feelings for, like, we know it's like you get older, your hangover doesn't last that one day. It was like the whole week. And I was just like, is this really worth it? So I would do like periods where I'd stop, but then every time I went back, it was mainly down to like not peer pressure, that's the wrong word, people pleasing. Because I wanted to still fit in with everybody, and I thought the only way I'm going to be able to fit in with these people is if I get as drunk as I normally did. And I just didn't feel confident about doing it. I even text one friend saying, oh, I'm going to take a break from the drink. Like, if this is kind of the end of the friendship, totally understand. And they were like, what are you talking about? Not just friends with you because you can drink a lot. Like, I do actually see other qualities in you, which was really nice to say, and that kind of helped me. And I think, to be honest, it was like the anxiety. I just, I can't deal with this anymore, because it wasn't just the day of the hangover. It was like the rest of the week, and you're sitting at work, like going, oh my God, I've done something wrong at work. Oh, I was sweating and thinking they all know what you've been up to at the weekend. And I just thought, I just can't deal with that crap in my head anymore. Just too much.
And when you were drinking, did you were you more of a weekend binger or were you a regular boozer?
So in like the height of my drinking, when my first, because I was married before Steve, when that marriage broke down, I was drinking pretty much every day. I worked in hospitality, so I was just had booze on tap basically. So I could, well, I worked in a cafe, I could drink, you know, end of my shift, I'd probably get pissed, and then I would go off clubbing or to the pub at the end of the street. So I was drinking every day then, I would say, more or less. Then when I met Steve, I was still drinking, but we were both binge drinking. But in my mind, I was at first, I was like, well, that's all right, because you're not drinking every day like you were when you're out till God knows what time in some shady nightclub in Edinburgh. And I started to think, oh, that's all right. And everyone, you know, you look around, you're like, well, everyone else is doing that. Everyone else is just living for the weekend. So yeah, when I was starting to think about stopping, I was that classic binge drinker, probably doing a bit of coke on the weekends as well, if I'm honest. And I cut that out to start with because I thought that's what was causing me anxiety. Turns out it was the booze as well.
Well, that's the
But
thing, isn't it? Like everyone's having a cheeky line these days, but
yeah.
it's hard to. I think it's in a way, it's the thing that pushes a lot of people over the edge, like of going, actually, this is too much. Because I think, you know, I say this all the time: people that can just drink and have a glass of wine here and there, then whatever, crack on. I don't think everyone needs to go sober, but there are a lot of people that have too many glasses of wine, and then the more they do that, the more they become like used to it, and that feeling becomes like, oh, it's not actually that great, I need something else. Then they pick up gear, have a couple of lines, and then, oh, there you go, I've got a little buzz back again. So then now I'm in a geary, whiny state at the weekends, and you do that for a bit, and you think you've cracked it because you think, hang on a minute, this sobers me up, this makes me feel better, I've got more energy, I can stay up late, I can drink more, and then like bang, one day it's like, oh, no, fuck. That's not a good idea. That was a terrible idea. And actually, it's pushed me over the edge because it does push you push boundaries, don't you? In every part of your life, you start nudging it forward a little bit. And things, I liken it to those, you know, those machines you put 20p in and they stack up and then some of them drop. It's a bit like that. Every time you have a line, you're sticking 20p in the top, and then sometimes something just drops out and you're like, oh shit. I think it's good that you're honest about that because that it does play a big part. But equally, when you remove the booze, there isn't many people that I know that would sniff gear sober.
Oh,
So
no way.
you can't, if you are, you're a wrong
Yeah,
un. But
definitely.
if you remove the booze, you kind of kill two birds with one stone, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. And that, yeah, like I say, that I got stopped that to start with, because I remember thinking that must be why I'm anxious. That's why I wake up on a Monday morning in this sweat, going, oh God, how am I going to even do my job? But then, yeah, it slowly started to dawn on me. No, there was. The booze was playing a massive part in it as well. And like you were just saying, like those people that can just have one drink, like I always wanted to be that person. I would set out on my, like if I was going on a night out, I would say to myself, just have the one glass. You can do it. Just have one glass. Have one glass of wine, say your goodbyes, go home. And I'd find myself like 3 o'clock in the morning, 5 bottles of wine and going, why can't I just have one?
No
Like,
chance,
I
no
don't know.
chance. And so many people can relate to that. And I think that's the best way we get tripped up is that comparison thing where we look at people that can have one and we think, well, if they can, I can. But it's not true. We're all made up beautifully differently. That's what we've got to realize. And actually, whilst we can't have one drink, there's a lot of things we can do because we're a bit nuts. We've got that ability to then go and take risks, do things, be brave, you know, that perhaps other people haven't got, you know, everyone's got their own different strengths and weaknesses. We're all equal at the end of the day. It's just we've got a different way of getting to the end result. So I think, I think it's something I'm still trying to communicate to people that you can spend your life trying to be the person that can have one drink. But if you're not inherently genetically that person, you're essentially going to waste your life trying to have that one drink. So you're better off just ditching that idea. Get rid of the booze and get on with your life. And but it's not, it's much easier said than done, isn't it?
Oh God, yeah, it is so difficult. And I think as well, you want to be able to be that person that can just have one, because you still want to, at the start, fit in with everybody. And you think, oh, if I just have one, I'll still fit in with the group, because it's people don't like being out of the group as well. I think that's what they struggle with, like being the different one. But I just found that whole thing of like thinking I'll just have one, it took up so much headspace, because I'd have to think about it before the night, go, right, tonight I'm only having one, and that'd have to be in my head all the way to wherever I was going. Then I would have had the one getting towards the end and going, oh God, what am I doing then? Because you said you'd have one. So then you've got that whole, you said you've had one, but now you're at the bar with another glass of wine. What's going on? And it was just continual like chatter in my head. And all that is such a relief to have stopped now. I'm not drinking anymore. It's like all of that has just gone away. And it's one day I just thought, God, I don't have that little voice in my head anymore going, ee! And it
Yeah,
was like, wow, amazing.
it's peaceful, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And what how did your relationship have to change? Because obviously you gave up before Steve. How hard was that?
Yeah, it was challenging just to start with, and he will definitely agree with that, because like he wasn't drinking as much. He definitely cut back. But he would say, I'll just drink when I'm going on a big night out. And I'd be like, that's fine. And I had to just say, look, you do what you want. You're like 40 odds, got to live your life how you want to. But then it became that these big nights out were suddenly becoming quite a regular occurrence. And he was like, oh, I've just got a meeting so and so for this, or I'm going to watch the football, just having 2 pints. Well, Steve's the same as me, doesn't just have 2 pints, he has 2 pints and another 8. So it was hard, because I'd see him as well in the same state I was in, like hungover in bed, just wasting the whole day. And you're like, what the hell are you doing? We just get up, like, and just stop drinking. But I just knew that I'd have conversations with him going, you know, life would probably be a bit better for you if you did stop. But I couldn't ever tell him. And I think we went for our wedding anniversary to see Kevin Bridges, and Steve got wasted at that. And I was sober, and I was a bit like, Jesus Christ. And the next morning, I'd said to him, look, you know, that was really a bit shit night, because you end up getting pissed and speaking to some guy at the bar who I didn't even know. And then he was like, right, now I'm stopping again. I'm stopping. So then he had another period where he didn't drink. And then I think crept back in again. But then when he decided he wasn't drinking, he didn't tell me until we were going on holiday to Costa Rica. We were just about to board the flight. And he says, I'm not going to drink on this holiday. And I was like, oh, right. Okay, good. But I did even say to him then, like, if you get there and you've changed your mind, it's not a problem. I won't be angry, because you've got to do what you've got to do. And I know that's really hard, to like just let someone do what they need to do, but that's my advice to anybody. You've just got to be doing what you're doing, staying in your lane. And Steve has said to me that he began to realize what I was doing, and he could see the difference in me, and he started to think, wait a minute, I want to be like that. I don't want to be drinking and hungover. And that's what got him to eventually give up by himself. It wasn't anything that I could do or tell him, even though I desperately wanted him to give up.
Yeah. What about the changes in, you mentioned about Steve losing weight, but what about you? And what changes did you notice of sort of first when you stopped drinking? Can you
First change was that I wasn't being sick nearly every weekend after.
tell?
So
Nice.
that was nice, because I had really bad stomach problems as well. I mean, I was at the doctor's all the time on omeprazole, getting endoscopes, trying to figure out what was wrong with me. And it was stopped drinking and all that went away. And it's
Did it
like,
really?
oh, yeah. Like,
Wow.
yeah, it was a bit like, oh, that's obviously what it was. And just mentally, like, feeling better, and slowly getting confidence back, and starting, I think a lot of people say this, is starting to know who you are again, because you've kind of masked all that through the drink. And I know people struggle with, or a big thing is all these feelings come up and you're like, oh, what the hell's this? And it's having to deal with that. But like, feelings are there to be felt, so you've got to kind of process them at some point. But I guess once I've given up the drink, that was hard work doing all that, but just feel much better for doing it as well.
And do you
But
still?
yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say that just not having anxiety either was a massive thing for me too.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird, isn't it? I've taken on so well. It's probably one of the most common things when I take a coaching client on, and they say to me, and it happens at like it never ceases to amaze me. They say to me, "I've got like crippling anxiety. I've got to speak to you. Like, please help me." And they'll book like four sessions, six sessions, eight sessions. And after the first one, I speak to them on week two, and if they've managed to stay sober for a week, which in most cases they do, and in most cases they haven't done that for years, their anxiety is almost gone. Like literally, it's like I'm some sort of magician who's the worst magician ever, but it's nothing to do with me, or it's just the people don't realize what damage it's doing. And actually, your body, like you say, so clever. All it's trying to do is what to your body, your stomach's going like, fucking help me out here. And you're listening to it and like going to the doctors because you don't know any different. You're doing what's right. The doctors, in fairness, will probably not even know the full connection. So you then give up boozing, it stops. And it's like, oh, my body's actually a healing machine. And same with anxiety. You know, we just create this. We suppress so much shit that we cause ourselves this crippling anxiety. As soon as we stop drinking for a week, pretty much, you bang the load of it out of the way already. Then the journey begins, doesn't it? Then the
Yeah,
exciting journey
definitely.
begins. With yourself now, 3 years down the line, do you still like get the urge to drink?
Very like fleeting ones. I think sometimes it's maybe around summer. I think you can relate to this, where you maybe think, oh, nice glass of wine, white wine would be nice sitting outside the pub. But I think now I can just go to myself, yeah, but what's on the other side of that? Because it's not the one glass of wine, is it? And I've got better, I'm much better now at just being able to go, okay, that's just a little fleeting thought. I'm not going to act on it. Yeah, I might think it'd be nice, but I know deep down it isn't really. So yeah, I would be lying if I said I didn't have like the odd craving, but they're definitely far and few between now.
Yeah, I can relate to that as well. The cravings aren't like tonight. It's when what is it Wednesday night? I'm going to go and have a beer in a beer garden because it's sunny down here. It's not like that. But like you say, in the summer, it's like if there's a festival that I'd know that I'd have gone to, or if there is like a I don't know something going on there, like maybe it's England a Euros game. There's some. To be fair, I'm making that up because when it was the World Cup last year, or whatever it was. I didn't have a problem at all. I went to a pub gardens a couple of times because I can have a 0% beer. Like you really don't notice anymore. But in my head, maybe I need to try and move myself on because that's been my own thought on my temptations. But actually, when I talk about it out loud, I'm like, I'm not sure that's even valid. But there's definitely still something in there that wants me to come get fucked up, like the press the complete destroy button. Throw a grenade into my life, which is the weirdest thing. But I think we all can relate to that. Because that's what we're so used to, aren't we? Alcohol's caused us so many fucking problems. When you stop, it's like yesterday I was cleaning my cupboard out, right? I've been grafting hard. I was so productive yesterday. Like it's outrageous. That's the amount of stuff I did it for work. And then I was sitting there, I thought I'm gonna sit and I want to just sit in my own for 10 minutes and just have a little break. So I was getting like double vision from my laptop. And I thought, oh, no, I can't sit still. I'm going to quickly clean that cupboard out. And then I cleaned the cupboard out and I thought, shall I quickly just empty my wardrobe and clear it out, get it ready for summer? And then all of a sudden, I was thinking, I've done that already. And I went to open clean the cupboard and I sort of half cleaned the cupboard the other day. And I was thinking, I'm so far ahead of all these shitty jobs that I would normally be like, once in a life, once a year, you could clean your wardrobe out or sort it out. It wouldn't happen. Now I'm just pottering around doing shit all the time. And the amount of time and productivity and energy I have to do stuff is outrageous. But then you look back to the days where you, like you said, spend days and weeks in bed and hung over and doing fuck all and living in squalor with mental health in the toilet, physical health awful. But the thing to note is that we're still both sitting here saying that we still occasionally want to have a drink, which is mad when you know all that stuff, isn't it? It just shows the power of it. Crazy.
I think the thing is, just like for me, is that there is occasional cravings, but they're not like they were at the start, where it was like, oh,
Oh yeah.
they take you over and you don't know what to do with yourself. These are just like a little voice going, oh, that would be nice, but I can just go, no, not acting on that. Whereas before, you could be like, oh God, I'm just gonna have a drink.
Yeah, you just prompted me to write down something. It's mental action versus physical action. I think that's the sign of how long you've been sober. So what I mean by that is when you're early doors and you're getting a craving, you sort of have to take some physical action, which might be go for a run or might be take a drink, like an alcohol-free drink or something like that. Whereas For us, I think now it's more of a mental action. You can go, you like you say, you can just run the scenario. Actually, no, that doesn't work for me because I will end up smashed, or even if I'm not smashed straight away in 6 weeks' time, I've opened the door to it. It's going to lead me down the wrong path. So, yeah, I think it's good to note for people that are at the start of the journey that those cravings do dissipate and actually get far easier to deal with, and they become more thoughts rather than cravings.
Yeah, definitely.
So moving on to what you're doing with yourself now, what have you changed professionally in yourself since you over the last 3 years? What does your professional sort of life look like versus what it did when you were boozing?
So one thing that did happen to me is I was continually at my old job trying to get promoted, and I never, I could get through to interview and stuff, and I never get the promotion. And then I think about a year into stopping drinking, I got a promotion into another comp like a another company that I've been trying to do for like years. And I never really thought about it connected to being like not drinking, but I think it is because I could put all the effort in to get through the interview. I had enough time to prep to do a really good application form, whereas before it was just a bit like oh. And I just assumed I'd get the job, but it didn't work out. So I'm still working in my full-time job, but I did Andy's coaching course last year, so qualified as a coach in October, done the alcohol-free thing coaching, and then I'm just sort of working on that and on the side, sort of trying to build that up, getting some coaching clients. But I'm also, as you know, really into like astrology. I'm your personal moon guide.
You and Kirsty Gallagher.
Yeah, I'm trying to be the next Kirsty Gallagher. And then I'm really into tarot. So as well as my coaching, I'm trying to weave those things into coaching somehow. Like I'd really, my idea is that I will do alcohol-free coaching as like my main thing, but I'd like to be able for people who are interested bringing in some of the practices that really help me. Because once I stop drinking, and what I want to say is, you stop drinking and all this other stuff, it does take time to come in. So you've got to be realistic. Like I always think the first year you're just white knuckling, not drinking. You are just living that year going, I've got to do all I can just to not to have a drink. And once you've got that white knuckling year out the way, I think year two is when you start going, right, hang on, I don't drink. Who am I? What am I doing? What do I like? And that's when things just, you start exploring other things that might interest you, like hobbies and stuff. So when I'd stopped, it had been around lockdown as well. So I was quite lucky that I just started looking on at finding things that I like. So I think I got into like the crystals, and I had all these crystals around the house, and they kept getting delivered. And Steve was like, Jesus Christ, like how many more crystals are you ordering? Went off that, got into tarot, learned how to do tarot, and then from that got into astrology and all that, and just found that was my calling really. So I want to just like somehow, yeah, like I say, bring all that in, because it's helped me immensely, and if people are interested in that, oh well, that's what I want to do.
Fascinating. So before you went sober, you weren't even doing anything with crystals or tarot reading or anything.
I'd always had an interest in that kind of thing, but I wasn't really getting involved. Like my mum got a Chinese horoscope book for Christmas one year, and I remember sitting reading through it all, and I loved it. And I'd had tarot readings done before by people. I hadn't really ever thought of it was something that I would then get into. And then, yeah, it's just all sort of unfolded. I found one thing, and then that led me on to someone else, and trained with all these people. And
When
yeah.
you say you learn tarot reading, like is that some sort of magic circle thing? Like how is that, can anyone learn it, or do you have to be sort of like connected or gifted?
No, anyone can learn it. Like I've learned it from a woman, just online. And if you've got intuition and you've got the time to put in and kind of learn everything about it, then anyone can do it. I mean, I know it's got this rep of being a bit, oh, it's going to tell me I'm going to die on like Friday. It's not like that at all. It tells you stuff in the present moment, and it's like just another tool to support you, really, if you can buy into it like that.
And is that the same as like a spiritual medium reading?
So some people use tarot for like, like psychics bringing in messages from people. I don't do that. I just use them if someone comes to me and it's maybe like, oh, I'm kind of stuck in my career, I can just look at cards and give them a, it's, for me, it's more about guidance. And a lot of the time with the tarot, it's telling you what you've already known deep down. People don't sit really and take the time to listen into like that inner voice. So that's what I see it as. I don't, it's not a predictive tool, it's just a bit an extra tool to help you.
So, like a psychic medium's at kind of a next stage up in the spiritual world, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'll ever get to that stage. I do go to like a psychic night in an astrology club I'm in, and the woman that does it's incredible. Like, you'll know all about this anyway because you've had similar things, but I tell you stuff and you're like, how the fuck do you know that?
Mad.
What? Yeah.
And I get like, on my story, I won't bore everyone with it, but like, I've gone from someone who didn't believe in any of it to someone who's fascinated by it now. And I am careful not to, I think you can become reliant on it to
Yeah.
direct you. And I know some people that do that, they're constantly in the bloody spiritual reading. Like, and you think, hang on a minute, at some point you've got to get on with something. Do you know what I mean? Like, you got to
Yeah.
take a punt or you got to just follow something. And I sort of, I'm in this space now, which sounds a bit woo to some people, but I'm like, I await guidance and hopefully I'm in a position to see it. And if I'm not, then hopefully like the spiritual world will put me in a position to see it. Because I always think I need guidance on everything. Like, I'm very much, it's weird. I saw a good quote the other day and it said, there's the difference between fear and faith is, I'm going to butcher this, but the fear is like being scared of what happens, and faith is knowing that you'll be all right no matter what happens, essentially. And I've definitely gone from one to the other, and in a positive way. And whatever happens in my life now, I sort of have this overarching view that I'm looked after and I'll be
Yeah.
fine no matter what happens, no matter what it looks like, or no matter who you lose, what you do on along the way, what mistakes you perceive to make. It's all for the greater good anyway. So, and that way you can't go too far. As long as you don't start fucking doing drugs and shagging people and robbing houses. You can start twisting the words, can't you? But yeah, for me, I think it's very comforting is the word I'd use. So I love it. And you're going to be at Dry Fest, and this is new to me, so I'm assuming did we speak about this? Did Crystal speak to you about this?
I
Did we?
asked Crystal. So I just said, it's like you're saying, you'll hear like the guidance and stuff. So I did my first tarot reading for someone at the end in January, and then I kept getting all these sort of things coming through, like, you need to like do this more. And then one day I just got up and the voice just went, need to speak to Matt and Crystal about doing tarot at Dry Fest. So I just voice noted Crystal and went, okay, this is maybe a bit left field, but if you wanted to tarot reader at Dry Fest, I'll do it. And she was like, oh my God, yes, please do it. So yeah, their big announcement, I'm going to be doing tarot readings at Dry Fest. So
That is amazing,
yeah.
brilliant, and that's perfect setting for it as well. They're
Yeah.
gonna put you in a little tent in a corner,
In
there's
my
some crystals hanging down.
caravan.
Yeah, you have to go through the wind chimes to get in.
Yeah.
But that'll be wicked. So that'll be so good to have you there. I'm gutted that Steve-O can't be there, but he's in his dark
Know.
retreat, isn't he?
Yeah, I
But
know.
we'll
I'll
talk to
let
him.
him talk about that.
We'll do a little separate one with him, but. Is there anything else you wanted to say? And also, like, tell us where we can find you. And is there anything you've got going on that you wanted to talk about?
So obviously I've got the alcohol-free coaching, so I have taken on clients, so anyone can message me about that and we'll just do a free discovery call. I'm going to be running an introduction to astrology class starting on the 20th of March on Zoom, which is £40, and it's for beginners who just want to know a bit about astrology, because I'm running it because a lot of the beginners classes I went to, I felt they weren't really pitched at beginners, so this is really basic. So if anyone's got an interest in that, come along. And I'm on Instagram as Optimistic Coach, which is OPTIMYSTIC underscore coach for now, because I might change the name,
Are you going to change it in the next few weeks?
maybe,
Okay. Well,
but I don't know. I keep it at that for now, I'm not sure.
we'll put your dry username and your
Yeah.
Instagram username in the notes for this.
Yeah. And obviously, I'm a life member on Dry, so anybody, like I always say, just reach out to me. I'm always there.
You're a day oneer. No one can take
I
that away
am,
from you.
yeah. I love Dry as well. It's just such a great community. And one thing I just wanted to end on to say as well is that just to feel like proud of yourselves for wherever you are on the Dry journey. Because one thing I've noticed is a lot of people who aren't sober won't ever congratulate you or say well done for wherever you are on your Dry journey. But you're guaranteed in the sober community, everybody's cheering you on. So
That's
just wanted to say
beautiful.
that.
That's a great way to end it. And also, you won't know how many people you're actually inspiring, even if people can't say, well done, thank you. You know, 10 years down the line, you'll get a tap on the shoulder and someone's like, do you know what? Saw you do that and I've done it. And actually, it's changed my life. So, Annika, you are a legend and well
Thanks,
done. That's
Matt.
brilliant. Thank you so much for everything you do. Can't wait to see you. If I don't see you before, see you at Dryfest.
You will, yeah.
Or maybe we'll see you before. I feel like I might see you before. I don't know how or why or where, but. Maybe I will.
Oh.
Maybe it's because I'm coming to Scotland. Will I see you in Scotland? No, I
When
won't.
you come up for the retreat?
Yeah, probably won't,
No,
will
I
I?
think Steve's just picking. Is he picking you up at the airport?
I don't know. Should we probably discuss this off the podcast?
Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you so much. And thanks for everyone who's listening and get on to Annika for your tarot reading and for your general advice. And yeah, and we'll speak again very soon.
Okay. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.